things. These are all top of the line, but they come from Canada and they might be a little expired. I got Vicodin and Oxy, and I don't know what the pink one is, but it makes you think you don't got thumbs, so I don't recommend that one. I'll take the Vicodin, Connie said. How many do you have? I looked over at Connie's desk. Do you have anything new for me? No FTAs, Connie said, but I ran a more complete real estate report on Quan. He owns a lot of property in Trenton. If you can't find him at his travel office, he could be in one of his other buildings. I took the folder from Connie's desk. This is helpful. Thanks. I'm going back to Stark Street. I'm keeping an eye on Quan, but I haven't much hope. He's never alone. I'll go with you, Lula said. No, stay with Connie. Don't let her take too many Vicodin. How many's that? Lula asked. Give her one. I shoved the report into my messenger bag, took a donut from the box on Connie's desk, and drove to Stark Street. I parked across from Quan's building and settled in. I had my gun, my pepper spray, my stun gun, my cuffs, my doors locked. If I saw an opportunity to capture Quan, I'd call for backup. Connie's report itemized Quan's properties. He owned an office building on State Street, a parking lot on Mulberry, two blocks of warehouses on Upper Stark and 18th Street, the building with the travel agency, almost an entire block of semi-slum housing by the train station, and a mortuary on the fourth block of Stark. It occurred to me that the mortuary was a nice convenience for a guy who routinely made witnesses to his crimes disappear. I read through the Quan report four times. I checked my email on my cell phone. I called the office to see if Connie was still on the floor.
I gave her one Vicodin, like you said, but it didn't do nothing, Lula said. So I gave her two more and an Ativan, and she's back at her desk. She's kind of dopey, but I'm keeping my eye on her. If she falls out of her chair one more time, I'm taking her home.
I looked up at the second floor windows and saw Quan come to the window and look down at the street. I think I've just been spotted, I said to Lula. Quan is looking down at me.
You could try showing him some booby to get him to come say hello, but after last night, I don't know how he hangs.
There was a knock on my side window. I turned and looked into the eyes of a man with a red nose.
Mr. Quan would like to talk to you, he said through the window. Please come with me.
Oh, shit, I said to Lula. It's the killer. I dropped my phone and grabbed my gun. I opened the door, pointed the gun at the red-nosed guy, and he took off running. He ran across the street, and I ran after him. A car came out of nowhere and pitched me over the hood and onto the side of the road. I wasn't knocked out, but I wasn't smart either. I was stunned. The world was a blur. Words made no sense. I could feel my heart beating, and I wanted to get up and find safe ground, but my arms and legs weren't taking me anywhere. I was being lifted, and there was some pain, but the pain was far away. I was in a car or a truck. I was going somewhere. People were talking. I was being moved again. A chunk of time suddenly went missing. My next memory was of lying on something hard and cool. My mind was clear, and I realized I was strapped down, and I was under the glare of bright lights. I looked around. The room was small and sterile. The smell was specific. Bleach, formaldehyde, stale, cold air. I was in a meat locker, a holding room for the dead, and I was on a tray that could slide into a drawer for storage. A door opened, and I could hear people talking. They were walking closer. They entered the room, and my heart jumped in my chest. Quan, Soon, the man with the red nose, and two others.
Miss Plum, Quan said, we meet again. So sad that this will be the last time, but your death will serve a good purpose.
Such as what? I asked.
It will be one more warning to Mr. Bogart. More important than that, it will allow me to continue my operation. It was unfortunate that you happened into my office when we were preparing to package happiness.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It was only a matter of time before you figured it out. You saw the Bogart kids' cups in my office. You mentioned that I should get them into my freezer, but you knew they didn't contain ice cream, didn't you?
No. Quan narrowed his eyes at that. Probably was looking forward to killing someone smart, but now realizing I wasn't all that clever. Big disappointment. He pushed on anyway.
"Do you know why I'm so successful?" he said. "It's because I eliminate risk. You've been poking around making an obnoxious annoyance of yourself."
I was having a hard time concentrating because I was aching all over and my leg was killing me. "I never thought of a mortuary," I said. "I was looking for people with freezers."
"We can't flash freeze like the ice cream plant," Juan said, "but if we have a little time, we can get someone rock solid."
"You froze Arnold Ziegler?"
"Yes."
"Why did you coat him with chocolate and nuts?"
"We needed to send a message. I thought it was brilliant. It made a mess that took forever to clean up, but it was worth it. I thought blowing up the jolly truck was also clever. It was unfortunate timing that no one was killed."
"I think my leg is broken."
"No problem," Quan said. "We're going to slide you into your cozy little drawer, and you'll drift off to sleep. All pain will be gone. I'm told there's a little chattering and shivering, but it's brief. Then we'll think of something appropriate for you. We've already done the Bogart bar. Maybe we'll coat you in cherry syrup and make you into a popsicle. We'll have to find a large stick."
I was incapable of saying anything more. I was overtaken with panic. I'd been doing my best to show some bravado, but I was losing the fight. The thought of being impaled with a popsicle stick, whether alive or dead, filled me with horror.
"Close the drawer," Quan said. "I have an appointment for a pedicure."
The drawer slid closed, and the light went away. There was just the beating of my heart. It was pounding so hard I thought it had to be shaking the drawer. I felt the temperature drop. I closed my eyes. Tears leaked out, but I couldn't wipe them away because my arms were strapped down. So many things I'd wanted to do, places I'd wanted to see. I hadn't said, "I love you," enough. I was very cold. There was no sound in the drawer, a soft whirring of air. I was shivering uncontrollably, telling myself it was a good thing. When my body temperature dropped low enough, I would stop shivering, and I would fall asleep, and then I would be gone forever. And then there was light. It was the light at the end of the tunnel. I knew all about it because I'd read the book about the little boy in heaven. I opened my eyes and saw
Lula. "Holy fucking shit," Lula said,
and then she crashed over into a faint. I was back to the teeth-chattering stage.
"Wah-wah-wah-wah,"
I said. Morelli was working at the straps. He released them and lifted me off the metal tray. The room was filled with people. EMTs, cops, a bunch of range man guys, Morelli, and Ranger. Lula was back on her feet. Morelli carried me out to the ambulance. I was covered with blankets and hooked up to an IV. My jeans were cut off above the knee, and my right leg was put in a temporary air cast. Morelli stayed with me on the ride to the hospital and walked me through to the emergency room.
"I think you have a broken bone," Morelli said. "But I don't think it's a compound fracture. You've got some scrapes and abrasions."
"How did you find me?"
"Lula heard you go after the killer. She knew you were staking out Quan and might need help, so she took off for Stark Street. She called me, and I called Ranger. I thought Ranger could get a man there faster than I could. He's always got someone patrolling. Ranger's guy found your car with the driver's door still open. He asked around, and someone saw you get hit by a car, scooped up, and driven away."
"He had a red nose," I said. "That's how I knew it was the killer. I ran after him. I had a gun with bullets in it and everything. I swear I was ready to shoot him, and then, bam, hit by a car."
"A witness said the car was a big black Mercedes, and one of Ranger's men found it parked in front of the funeral home. It had some front quarter panel damage where you made impact. We had an army here by then."
Chapter 29. I was in my apartment with my leg propped up on the coffee table. The break was midway between my knee and my ankle, and the leg was encased in a plaster cast. Morelli sauntered in with a roll of paper towels and a couple cold bottles of beer to go with the pizza he'd brought for dinner.
"How's the leg?"
he asked. "It's fine. No pain, just inconvenience. Anything new on Quan and his henchmen?"
"They're going away for a long, long time. Like forever. You'll need to testify."
"There's something I never understood. Why did they put Ziegler in the ice cream truck? Why not just put him in the Bogart freezer? And who stole the truck in the first place?
One of Kwan's guys stole the truck. It was easy. It was sitting at the loading dock, and it was taken when the security guy was in the building doing rounds. The plan was to load Ziegler into the truck and then leave the truck at the Super Shopper loading dock on Route 130. They were supposed to get a big ice cream delivery for a street fair event that was going to be held in the parking lot. Kwan figured someone from Super Shopper would open the truck, Ziegler would fall out, and Bogart would get a lot of negative press on it.
They must have been nuts when the truck got stolen.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And all this so they could take over his ice cream plant?
The ice cream plant was a convenience. They were packaging drugs in Bogart kids' cups and transporting them all over the Northeast.
I helped myself to a second piece of pizza. How about Harry Bogart?
He's plea bargained. He might get a little time, but I doubt it'll be anything major. He was an accessory after the fact, and he's been completely cooperative. Mostly he's guilty of being stupid.
Who's going to run the factory if he goes to jail?
His daughter will take over, and Mo Morris is going to help. When all this went down, the family pulled together.
Do you know why those two guys disliked each other so much when all this started?
Apparently they never got along, not even as kids, just oil and water personalities.
And yet these two personalities both went into the ice cream business.
It was originally one company, Universal Ice Cream. It was owned by a common relative who died and left half of the company to Harry and half to Mo. People tell me they almost killed each other as partners and finally divided everything up and went off on their own.
So maybe something good will come of all this and they'll get along, I said. Maybe Kenny Morris and the Bogart girl will get together again, too.
Not likely. I think Harry and Mo will get along just fine while Harry's in jail. After that, I'm not sure. And it turns out Kenny was a lot more enamored with the Bogart girl than she was with him. Plus, she was freaked out with the whole dating a cousin thing. She was using her father as an excuse.
Too bad. Kenny seemed like an okay guy.
Yeah, he's in rehab,
Morelli said.
He'll be even more okay when he dries out.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt married his cousin Eleanor.
Go figure.
Morelli looked down at my cast.
I remember when I had a cast on my leg, it was a real pain to take a shower. You might need some help.
Are you volunteering?
I'm insisting. Wait until you see what I can do with a loofah.
Am I a lucky woman or what? This is Lorelei King. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Turbo 23, a Stephanie Plum novel by Janet Ivanovich. This program was produced by Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2016 by Ivanovich, Inc. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.